Blog Talk Radio.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, welcome to FDH Lounge, mini episode number 121. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, and we've got a tremendous show for you here today. This has become an annual tradition in the FDH Lounge. This is now, I believe, the third year that we've done this. Two of our favorite regulars here that we have on both separately and together, we are going to be having on today. That is assuming that one of them is going to be able to join us. Lloyd Carroll has a commitment at Yankee Stadium right now. Our good friend Lloyd Carroll from the Queens Chronicle, there is a good possibility he'll be joining us in progress. But we have the other of our favorite combo of regulars that we have here in the lounge. And certainly, as I say, we have these guys on separately, and I guess that's how we're going to start. We have them on together. They play off of one another very well, and their insights on television and entertainment taken together are always very interesting because of the often complimentary takes that they have on things, sometimes differing. But again, the other gentleman who is a big part of this duo here, probably our favorite person to talk to on matters of TV and technology, and somebody who I have to say has just been a great font of wisdom to us as we've been growing our show, and has been very kind in his support of us and his advice to us over a period of time. We'll start with him, our good friend Simon Applebaum of Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Good to get you in the lounge. How are you doing today?
Very well, Rick. I have to tell you, it's been a very busy last couple of weeks with the upfronts. We were at the cable show in Boston on Monday. We did our first ever live Tomorrow Will Be Televised episode from there. First time we've ever done a major TV industry event. First time we've done it away from our home base in New York. And so it's been a lot of fun and a lot of frenzy over the last couple months.
Simon, let's start on that note before we get to TV, because we're always interested in what you're doing with your show, and you're somebody who's really kind of helped show the way for programs like this one. What was that like doing your first one out there in Boston on the road?
Well, the cable show was just wrapped up earlier this afternoon in Boston at the wonderful Boston Convention Center. It was terrific. About 12,000 people were there, about a little less than last time out in Chicago and before that D.C. But I have to tell you, I think there was a lot of excitement about where cable is going, a lot of excitement about where TV overall is going. There's a real sense that the cable networks have to step it up in terms of original scripted and reality programming, make it year-round, not just do it in the summer or the fall, the spring, but do it year-round, keep introducing the shows, hope for things that stick, do different kinds of scripted shows than what is being done on broadcast or elsewhere. And there's also a sense that the connected television set, which is taking off with the American public, is making services like YouTube, Hulu, Netflix, Amazon, and so on, major contenders for original scripted programming and original reality shows. And there's also no getting around the fact that interactive television is starting to take off. Google TV is happening. We will probably at least hear news of an Apple television set before the year is out, if not see one. And there's a sense that the cable operators, as well as the satellite and the telco operators, have got to play the best ball they can in order to keep subs.
Well, clearly, yeah, these developments are very exciting. I can say on a personal level, visiting my brother and his family for Christmas in Atlanta when he got a Google-enabled TV, the chance to see my programming that I've done with FDH past and present right up there on a TV screen, that's a moment that I'll never forget, and I'm sure that's the case for a lot of people when they get to experience that for the first time. But, yeah, the interconnectedness of this and everything really ties into the fact that this was really the first year, was it not, that we saw a coordinated effort with the new fronts out there, a new media attempting to do what the upfronts had been doing previously. I know there'd been a little bit of this here and there, but it seems like 2012 was the year that thing really kind of took off.
Yes, and it really tells you that online video and websites are stepping it up in terms of original programming. It is going to be a fact of life from now on that we're going to have annual new front or presentation events from the likes of Microsoft and AOL and Yahoo and Hulu and Google YouTube. The sense you got, and while the actual presentations, I think, went all over the map, some were very well done, some were awful, some were like 3.5 hours without a break. Everyone did panels, which unfortunately did not work, and that's something I think should be taken into account for doing it next year. But I have to say, I think that YouTube finally came out of the closet in terms of what they were doing with the original programming, these original channels. Of the 100 that were announced last fall, about half of them are up and running. They're getting pretty good traction, pretty good viewership, and YouTube has made it clear it's not going to stop at 100. They're going to do more channels. There's one that's just launched called Wigs. It's a women's service doing scripted plumbing aimed at and done by women with some terrific actresses like Regina Madsen involved with them and a great creative talent like Rodrigo Garcia, formerly did HBO's In Treatment. John Avnet, the wonderful producer-director of Fried Green Tomatoes fame, is involved too. So it shows you that the online video people are going to be around for a while, and that whole scene is just going to keep growing and growing and growing because the audience clearly wants it. As I said, with connected TV sets, you're going to see this become more than just a computer thing. You're going to see it be a television thing. One more thing about the cable show. I thought it was very interesting on Monday was what Comcast demonstrated at their booth. Number one, Skype is now a Comcast feature in Boston and in other markets around the country. It's going to go rapidly. I think this is the beginning of what could be the most personal interactive medium we've ever seen. Now that Skype is under Microsoft control and they're now doing it for the television set as well as for the PC. And also Comcast is rolling out their new next generation look called X1, which allows you to call up titles, may allow you to use voice and gesture control to call up the shows you want, to do interactive apps like Facebook and Pandora. And in addition, they showcased a trial called Project Dayview, which I think is pretty exciting. We talked about on the show before, Rick, about the idea of using television to control everything else in your home or apartment, your lights, your stereo, your appliances, your garage door opener, your home security system. And Project Dayview allows you to do that on a TV set with a remote control or your smartphone, as well as, or tablet, I might add, as well as get, like, here's how my day is going to go, my calendar, my voicemail, my email, as well as my entertainment. This Project Dayview thing is something to watch very carefully, and it looks like Comcast is going to roll this out at least one market before the end of the year.
Wow.
That is a real game changer. I mean, it almost puts me in mind of something we were talking about on the program a couple months ago, which has nothing to do with that directly, but in terms of 3D printing and about how that could transform society in the next couple of years. In a real, it's apples and oranges in the one sense, because what you're talking about is an organizational thing, everything flowing through the TV, but it does seem like another example of how technology could, in the next half decade or so, just change life as we know it.
Mm-hmm. And something else, too, to keep in mind, Rick, is that Google this week acquired Motorola Mobility. While everyone is talking about what they're going to do with the smartphones that Motorola has, let's not forget that Motorola is one of the two major set-top box players for cable and satellite, where millions of households connected to. And it's not out of reach to say that one of the things that Google might do is put Google TV into those set-top boxes. They may have some hurdles to get over, but they can certainly do it, and that's something we all should be watching. Incidentally, probably the most controversial thought at the cable show on the opening panel on Monday was Glenn Britt, the head of Time Warner Cable, when asked by Aaron Burnett of CNN, formerly CNBC, will set-top box go the way of the dodo bird? He said, and I quote, yes, Motorola and Cisco Systems, the other major set-top box made it, might not like it, but that may be where we're headed. And for him to say that in public and not mince words was pretty telling.
That is very interesting. I mean, there's signs of change really all around at a couple of these different events. One of the things that seemed the most symbolic to me of the reports that I was getting back from the upfronts and in this case the new front, because of course the FDH New York Bureau, Steve Cervillo, ever present at these things here and reporting back to me on what he was seeing, and I was doing some independent reading on this as well. Seth Meyers of SNL fame, now going to be doing a show specifically for Hulu. I mean, isn't that something that really kind of encapsulates where this whole thing is going, that Hulu, which again started out as a venture among a couple of the big TV channels to merely to carry their programming that was on existing television, now branching rather aggressively, it seems like, into original programming.
It's Hulu. It is Netflix. It is going to be Amazon. It could be Microsoft for the Xbox. It certainly is YouTube with the original channels. It could be other websites. If Verizon and CoinStar decide to do a similar type service and streaming, they may get into the game. But it's also DirecTV. It's Dish Network. It's Fios. It's UVerse. Everybody is getting into this original programming game, and it means that if you're a television show or if you're a television production company, you got more ways to play than you've ever had in your life. And it's even come to the point where there is a website, a la Kickstarter, called Mobcaster that I've covered on the show, on my show, which has already gotten some pilots for television shows off the ground simply because of offering the ability to fund it to the public. And I think that's a pretty interesting deal. So if you're a content player, this is your golden age.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And as a content provider, that's certainly very comforting to hear. But just as a consumer, I'm fascinated by it also. And again, this is really the time of year where all these things are really so much in the spotlight because of the emphasis on the fall schedules and everything that you guys have been covering the last couple of weeks. I got to tell you, there was a piece of news that came out that was independent of the upfronts last week, just kind of a coincidence that was in the news. But I have to tell you, Simon, you're a guy I was thinking of when I heard about this, the news about from the census about the birth rates in this country, non-whites surpassing whites for the first time here. That's something that you have long been talking about as far as diversity in TV and where this country is heading. So, almost kind of fittingly that news comes out the same week as the upfronts for whom this is a matter of focus every year, it seems like.
And this has to be, Rick, front of mind with everybody. What the U.S. Census came out with last week clearly shows that there's been some alternating conflicting reports about how the birth rates are going. But one thing is clear. We are going past 40% of the people in this country being people of color. We are going to go to 50%. We're going to get there a lot sooner than we all think. Forget about 2050, 2040, maybe 2030 or sooner. And everyone in the television industry, and I might add the internet side of things too, has to think about how they reflect society at large. If you are a television show, if you are a production company, if you're a website, and you don't showcase people of color in front of, behind the camera, in that executive suite, you have an issue. And what is still crazy is that it is not a major conversation. It's getting there, and certainly I think what happened at the upfronts this past week in terms of broadcast television compared to last year, where there was not one new show on NBC, on CBS, on Fox, and on the CW that had a lead actor of color, and very few supporting actors of color, that is starting to change. That's good. Now we have to see more steps. We have to see more steps. We're seeing steps whether it be by the cable networks and by other factors as well. But we have to see a lot more, and we have to see a lot faster, because we're also seeing new multicultural networks spring up on broadcast and cable. We're seeing the Spanish language market, Zoom, as well as the rest of Latino television. There is an Asian American network on the scene, and we're going to see more of these happen, especially if people think that they of color are not being served by broadcast and cable. They will go elsewhere. We just came through a season, the first in memory that I can recall, and I've been covering TV for three decades plus, where Univision on any given night in households alone beat the CW in ratings and came close to tying the number four network on the broadcast totem pole, where that network that night was ABC, Fox, or NBC. Telemundo is now beating the CW on any given night in households, and in the whole demographics, it's an even bigger story. And Univision, Telemundo are now taking that to the bank, and they're saying to the advertisers, look, we give you the audience that you want, and we're giving you this multicultural, diverse audience, so it's time for you to pony up. When Univision says that they're up front last week, give us 15% of your budget, move it to us. They're talking hardball, but it's hardball that they can back.
Yeah, I mean, nothing speaks like green, and if they got the numbers to back it up, one would think that the money will certainly follow. As far as from a big picture point of view, what were some of the more noteworthy rollouts in the course of and speaking specifically, I guess, of last week when by and large it was the major networks that were out there doing this? I guess we could also throw USA and the Turner into the mix, also TBS, TNT. Out of all of those, what were some of the more noteworthy things that came out that that you think have a chance for success this fall?
One thing that hit me is that a lot of the broadcast networks are placing bets, and in NBC's case, a big bet, Rick, on comedy. NBC, probably the biggest bet. They're betting the farm that they can make it with comedy. They're doing 1 or 2 hours of comedy sitcom programming every night, Tuesday through Friday, and they've been the store on it. A couple of them show some promise. This Animal Practice show on Wednesday nights, paired up with guys like Kids, with Anthony Anderson of Law and Order fame among the co-stars, I think could be a sleeper hour of comedy. And there's a chimp who is absolutely lovable that stole the show and may have been the not only the animal star, but maybe in some ways the star of the upfronts. Unlike last year where NBC sitcoms barely drew a laugh, Whitney in particular, these ones did. And I think if that's a barometer of the general audience at large, some of NBC's new comedies may have a shot. There's general feeling that ABC's The Neighbors, which we slide after Modern Family, is a dud. That may be one of the first to go. Another thing that really hit, once again, is switching of time periods. Once again, CBS, it wasn't as much the new shows they're introducing, although one of them caught a lot of attention, Elementary, the new Sherlock Holmes sort of reboot for the 21st century series. What was the time period switches? Switching 2.5 Men from Monday nights to Thursday for its 10th season, paired up with Big Bang Theory, whose own switch from Monday to Thursday worked, and also moving some other shows, The Mentalist, to Sunday night at 10, as well as canceling one of the CSI shows, CSI Miami, which was the Sunday night 10 o'clock occupant. ABC, I think, is taking a big gamble with Revenge, moving that from Wednesday night at 10, where it's been a middle-of-the-road second place on Wednesday night show, to see if it could become the new Desperate Housewives at 9 o'clock on Sunday nights, paired up with Once Upon a Time, which was the big surprise, I think, of this whole year. And one other thing on CBS's part, big surprise in terms of cancellation was Unforgettable. Here is a top 20 show that gets about 10, 11 million households a week in this deflated time for broadcast network television, makes the top 20, one of only 3 or 4 shows that consistently does, and yet, even though it wins the time period, it gets canceled by CBS. But good news for the Unforgettable crowd, TNT and Lifetime are trying to keep the show going for another year, and that may come to haunt CBS for that decision.
Well, shades of what we were talking about before with the Spanish TV networks, that if you have things that consistently draw ratings, that is going to bring money in. In the case of the Spanish networks, advertising dollars, and in the case of the producers of this show, yeah, you would think that they would find a home for something proven. And it takes me back to something. I'm trying to remember who it was on our show that said this. One of our past guests, I think it might have been Jim Louderback, but somebody was remarking upon this, and I was thinking of it when you were going through that there, that essentially the throwaway programs on CBS are something that ratings-wise, it seems like that NBC and some of these other networks would kill for.
Mm-hmm. Could be. And I'll tell you, one of the unusual situations, I thought, was Fox and the CW. Fox is basically staying pat with what it's got. They're not introducing that many new shows. And in the case of the CW, for them, it's like ratings be damned. We don't care what anyone says about the fact that we're the lowest rating on the totem pole among the major broadcast networks, and we're sinking like a ship. We're going to keep going. We'll keep shows on like 90210 that certainly was not working, and we'll keep Gossip Girl on for another fall season, its last. But even though they may get a lot of brickbats for that, they are introducing some shows that may work and maybe beyond the 18 to 34 core audience. Arrow, which is the adaptation of the Green Arrow character from DC Comics, I think is a fascinating cinematic show. I believe the opening episode was done by Jon Favreau. Beauty and the Beast, the former CBS hit of the 1980s, remember that with Linda Hamilton and Ron Perlman, I think a very underrated show when it came out, is going to get a reboot with Kristen Kirk of Smallville fame, co-star there, being one of the co-stars on this program. And also this Emily Owens MD, which is quirky and is going to be paired up with Heart of Dixie, which I didn't think much of, but apparently is getting a second shot. But what the CW under new president Mark Pedowitz is saying is, look, we go on social media reaction. We go on online reaction. And if that audience tells us we're doing great, we keep the shows.
Well, it seems a very cutting-edge way to do things, definitely, particularly by Hollywood standards. We'll have to see if that continues to bear some fruit for them. I see that we have on the lines now, and I don't know how long he's going to be available here, so I'll tell him at the outset here, Lloyd, anytime you got a book, that's fine. I know you're squeezing us in. The other half of our deadly duo here, Lloyd Carroll, the Queens Chronicle, joining us here on the FBH Lounge. Lloyd, good to have you on, my friend. Thank
well,
you so much for
squeezing
us
in. It's a pleasure to be joining you again for the post upfront reaction here. I was funny, just heard you talking about the CW, and you know, perhaps the William Lynch MD and Heart of Dixie, maybe we could summon the spirit of Jack Kevorkian and put this network out of its misery once and for all.
So you're a pessimist. So you're a seller on the CW, Lloyd. I take it.
Disgrace. I'm a Time Warner shareholder. They should just pull the plug on it. I mean, I'll tell you this. Part of it's personal is, you know, for a network that is pathetic when it comes to ratings, and they lie like hell on social media. They've got nothing. And here's the sad part. They kept a lot of media out this year. Maybe their programming is so awful they didn't want me to see it.
Wow. Well, I think they based on what you just said, knew what your reaction was going to be. So, well, we ran through with Simon a second ago some of the things that he thought were the more notable on the fall schedule here. What were the things that jumped out at you the most, Lloyd?
Well, I agree with Simon. One thing, I like the Animal Doctor show it's not a chimp, it's a Campuchian monkey, so that's named Crystal. So that's NBC's
okay.
Breakout star.
Really?
You know, that is a network of J. Fred Muggs, if you go back to the golden age of television. So obviously, simians have worked for NBC. God knows something's got to work for them. I was not at the CBS up front, so I cannot possibly comment on it. They did not invite me, so their real estate in my column gets a little more limited than it usually gets. Although, ironically, they have two stars from Queens on that. So David Krumholtz will be in Partners from Forest Hills, and Luce Liu is from Jackson Heights on Elementary. I'm not quite sure either of those shows are really going to do. I don't know. Hey, Simon, what do you think of The Mentalist and moving it to Sunday at 10? Is that a smart
call? I think it's pretty smart. I actually think it's pretty smart. It's still a very well-liked show, still top 20. I think the audience will go for it. I think it's nicely paired with The Good Wife, which will stay at 9 o'clock on Sunday nights. And I don't see ABC really come up with anything at 10 o'clock. Of course, last year they tried Pan Am, which, by the way, this just in, there is now talk that Amazon might pick the show up, because even though it didn't do well here in the United States, it is doing well internationally. But the thing about CBS is they come from a pillar of strength. They canceled very few shows this year. They put on very few shows this past year, and some of them worked, some didn't. But they have had the strength, and Leslie Moonves continues at the head of CBS to be the most joyful, joyous person in network television. He put on the procedurals, put on the sitcoms, and we're fine.
Yeah, I mean, some of what Had to Be a Gentleman was a complete flop. So I think he kind of throws a few in just to, probably for political reasons, knowing they're going to stink, but it probably does, you know, certain business relationships that you have to look at the upfront. And you said Unforgettable has a chance of staying alive somewhere.
Before he came on, Lloyd, I said that I think that Lifetime and TNT are bidding for it. I think it will stay on. I think this was the bad call of the whole upfront season, and not just CBS, because this is a show, as I mentioned, was a top 20 show, still wins the time period. And the problem with CBS was it's too older, maybe way too older. But why not? Hey, heck, there is an audience over 50, you know, and they should be served. And I think Lifetime and TNT get that. And I think CBS will rue that call. I really do. I think that has the chance to blossom into a show to run for at least 4 or 5 years on that network. Tuesday night, 10 o'clock is a great time period for them. And I think Lifetime and TNT will take that, and they'll run at the same time period and get a very good audience.
Well, it's funny because TNT is, you know, is keeping Cougar Town alive, and ABC discard with Courtney Cox. So this could be a new trend here. I'm hoping it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and by the way, one other thing too about these upfronts that Lloyd alluded to. There were far more upfronts that the press was not allowed in. A&E, USA, I had no invite to. We had 18 upfront events last week, and about half of them I did not get invites for whatever the deal. And CBS, same thing. ABC, I don't know if there was a simulcast that the press could see in Lincoln Center at their headquarters nearby. But it seemed that this year, and it wasn't just with some broadcast networks, it seemed that there were quite a few networks, and also with the new fronts, too, where press was not invited. And I think that, frankly, they have to rethink those plans. Also, to CW's credit, they do a press conference after the upfront. Some networks do it before on a conference call. I'd like to see more of them do the CW format, which is have the upfront, then right after the ceremony, bring the press down and do a quick conference call or press conference.
Well, they have to let me
I just have to laugh when I hear that, thinking about our senior producer, Steve Cervillo, whose motto in life seems to be invitations are for suckers. But, yeah, it would probably behoove the networks to spread the invites out a little bit more and not restrict access as much as that. I mean, it's interesting, guys, because the one recurring motif, unsurprisingly, as we've been going through this conversation, has been money. Whether it be a Univision and Telemundo being able to command more of that from advertisers with proven draws on their channel, whether it be programs moving to other networks after they've been cast aside because they have the ratings to be able to back it up. And one more thing here along those lines in terms of money, I think that for a lot of us laymen out there looking at the TV industry, we tend to think money in terms of star power, in terms of putting out a high wattage star on there. And one of the things that just comes to mind the most when I look at this here is a man who has drawn incredible money in other walks of life, now trying to take his talents to a sitcom. I'll start by asking you this, Simon, and get your opinion, Lloyd. On what you guys think is going to happen. Dane Cook trying a sitcom here. This is a guy who has just made incredible bank over the last decade with his stand-up act, and clearly that had to be what the network was thinking when they gave him a sitcom here that it's going to transfer. But what do you think the process is going to be? How smooth do you think the transfer to sitcom glory is going to go?
What show is that, by the way? What show and what network?
Is that The Caller? I think
NBC.
The Caller, Simon. Yeah, it was, I think, a mid-season replacement. Something called The Caller. I think that's what it was called, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Replaced a shock jock. Go ahead, Simon. Want to take that one? Is that for a memory for you?
Well, it could work. The thing is, though, mid-season shows have a tougher time because you got to get into production fast and you got to promote fast, especially if you end up being on the cleanup situation if a show cancels early. So it's a tough call to go mid-season. Although you're seeing a lot more of the shows that are being announced now but are being planned for mid-season. NBC, for example, is now adopting this idea of we'll do two shows in the time period, one in the fall, one in winter. And if they work with that, I think you'll see more of it. It's almost like the BBC version of things where you have like three or four shows because of the fact, well, maybe 10 or 11 episodes each, going the same time slot year-round. For example, Smasher Fashion Star or The Voice and something else Monday or Tuesday nights. So you may see more of that if it works. But
well,
still, mid-season is very dicey.
Simon, before I ask Lloyd, I want to get a follow-up from you here because I just want to play devil's advocate with what I think the network position is. My guess is the network's looking at it, and they're figuring that a lot of Dane Cook's demographic probably watches Sunday Night Football, which is maybe the most powerful thing that they have for pushing their programming. You got to think during the fall and especially into the winter, they're going to be pushing that thing real strong. So does that at all change your opinion on how you think it could fare as a mid-season replacement?
Still depends on the show, Rick. It really does. I mean, NBC promoted Smash a lot, and the show had a great first episode, and then it tumbled in following weeks. They now have a new showrunner, by the way. They've already said sayonara to some of the co-stars. So we'll see what happens. I mean, Smash, I think, is an example. We've had examples of shows that have done well through football promotion, and then we've had shows like Smash that didn't.
Well,
interesting. Lloyd, what do you think? What do you think Dane Cook's chances for success are? Man, again, I know you guys probably only saw a snippet of the program there, but the whole notion of trying to take a monster comedy star and put him in a sitcom.
Slim and none. His film career fizzled pretty badly. And here's a case in point of something that was absolutely set up. The idea of a shock jock, a Howard Stern, a Mancow Muller would have been ideal for a guy like Cook. I think that's a good premise. And when you watch that five-minute clip, I couldn't believe how unfunny, typical boy-girl stuff. Maybe it's not Cook's fault. Maybe it's the script. But I left shaking my head saying, how could you blow? It's like watching a basketball player blow the easiest slam dunk and watch the ball bound off the rim and go to half court the other direction. That was the biggest disappointment I had seen at the NBC up front. Ironically, the show that I enjoyed at the NBC up front was with Matthew Perry called Go On, where he plays a kind of the sports version of that, the shock jock, whose wife died. He goes into a grief counseling. And I love the show. It captured all the sarcastic Matthew Perry that I love. But it's the same show that ABC had with Mr. Sunshine. So I'm saying to myself, why would NBC run the same show that basically ABC canceled? Simon, any ideas on that one?
Yeah, I agree, too. I like some elements of Go On. I thought it was sort of semi-mesh. And if the producers take it that way and NBC promotes it that way, it has a shot. I go back to this whole thing. NBC is placing a big bet on these sitcoms, and there are some sitcoms like Whitney that got a second shot that should not have. Community also, we now have the fear about the executive producer creator getting booted by Sony and NBC, and he's struck back, and the cast is up in arms about it, except for Chevy Chase. But NBC is putting the pedal on sitcoms. They are betting the store on it. And we'll see whether they make it work. One other point I want to get to, depending on time, a very interesting story also this week in terms of syndicated programming. Scripps, which the TV station owners, as well as the folks who run Food Network and so on, is going to cut Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy from their television stations. And what they're going to do is they're going to replace it with two new shows. It will appear on their stations first, then Warner Brothers will take it to syndication outside their markets in 2013 or earlier. The shows are called Let's Ask America. It's a new game show where the contestants are at home and get asked questions from a central source. They're related to current events. And the second is The List, which is a new news magazine that's a combo of news and pop culture. Keep your eye on this. This is the first effort to do something different in the 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern time, 6 to 7 central time zone, what we call the prime access hour, in years. And if this thing works, this could shake up the marketplace. I got to tell you, though, Sony is, I'm sure, very unhappy at Scripps for taking this out. But you may see the television station groups like Scripps and Raycom Media and others around the country, because of the high price of syndicated shows like Jeopardy and Wheel, to try, which have been declining in ratings little by little over the years, to try to do their own stuff with the likes of a Warner Brothers or another syndicator. So keep your eye on this this power hour that will start on Scripps stations this fall.
Interesting, because that's one of the most stable pillars, and I'd say maybe all of entertainment, not just TV. That 7 to 8 o'clock hour, you've got game shows like that. You've got your Seinfeld reruns and other things like that. The notion of something new coming in there is very revolutionary, it almost sounds like, Lloyd.
Yeah, well, I tell you, next thing you know, maybe Access Hollywood and Entertainment Tonight and The Insider and all those knockoffs might disappear. So I mean, any chance of any of those might be in trouble?
I think they might. Something else that happened this year is that Family Feud with Steve Harvey has been tested now in a number of markets, including Los Angeles and Miami, from the 7-8 time period on independent stations. And they are making headway. The show is, believe it or not, after a decade in syndication where it went nowhere, it was borderline all over the time. In the last few years with Steve Harvey, has taken off like a rocket. It's getting the highest ranks it's ever had. A lot of it is due because of the primetime upgrades. Channel 9 here in New York, WWE, has not done it yet. They've kept it in the mid-afternoon without much publicity. But somebody is going to try to do it, I think, in New York. And if so, it's going to be interesting to see what the ratings are. Incidentally, I really criticize the Emmy Award people for not giving Steve Harvey an Emmy nomination for Best Game Show Host. That is a real missing.
It does seem kind of strange that he wouldn't have at least gotten nominated for. Yeah, it does seem like an oversight in that regard, definitely. Is there anything, and I'll start with you on this one, Simon, anything that you see that makes you think that the landscape, when we're talking about this at this time next year, as is our tradition, that things are going to be too much different? There's been obviously so much stability in recent years with CBS. They know who they want to go after, and they're successful in getting them. NBC, yeah, they're doubling down in sitcoms now, but they've been known a lot for that with the Thursday night lineup over a period of time. So they're clearly trying to draw upon at least their distant heritage here. ABC's had their ups and downs. Same with Fox. Is there anything to make you think, Simon, that the landscape's going to be too much different a year from now?
I think there could be quite a bit of difference depending on how much original programming the cable networks come up with. And we're going to see some new networks get into the scripted game, Bravo, Hallmark, and E! Entertainment Television, for starters. So there's going to be more scripted programming, more kinds of scripted programming, more of it year-round, and I think that could have a difference. Something else to keep in mind is that there's even competition within the broadcast network television sphere, because we're seeing all of these new sub-carrier networks, networks that are carried both on the digital signal of television stations and, because of must carry, on cable systems like Bounce TV, which is going to be launching two comedy programs and a sitcom this coming month in June. You have networks like LA TV aimed at Latinos and a crossover audience. You have the Cool Music Network. You've got the Country Network. And I think some of those are going to get into the upfront presentation game. They're going to up the ante. They're starting to get clearance around the country. And I think there could be a little implosion in terms of ratings from those folks if they keep going.
Yeah, there's so many different options here, Lloyd. I don't think anybody's ever going to say that Bruce Springsteen was 20 years ahead of his time when he said 57 channels and nothing on, because it sounds like there's a tremendous amount that's coming on, and more so every day.
Well, you know, it's funny. I just heard from Simon about Bravo doing more scripted television. I'm sorry, you guys. I was looking forward to The Real Housewives of Cleveland and Shaker Heights. I guess that's not going to happen.
Oh, don't be surprised. If Andy Cohen gets his way, he might get, don't forget, Bethy Frankel has a talk show coming out soon in syndication, daytime. Wonderful segue, that Lloyd. And incidentally, let's not forget also that we have some networks from Comcast's side of the fence that are going to be coming on cable systems, like the new Magic Johnson network, Aspire, that will be launching probably toward the end of next month. There's Robert Rodriguez's El Rey Network, which is going to be a lot of original programming that will be coming out in 2013, 2014, and the new Sean Combs service, Revolt. And we may see, again, more networks aimed at and programmed by people of color. And, again, that I think is going to be a big, big deal.
You know, it's also interesting, Rick, Simon, that I noticed a lot of the Viacom networks were very low-key, like Spike. There's a network that we should be talking about. You know, aimed at guys, and they do absolutely nothing in terms of, you know, working the media, et cetera. And I'm a little disappointed in that since I write on men's lifestyles and sports. I don't know what's going on with Viacom. That's just my own gut feel on this.
I totally agree with you, Lloyd. I was very surprised with MTV also. They were very low-key. VH1, same thing. Nickelodeon was probably one of the few Viacom networks that was out there. And then there's also this new block called Nick Mom, which is going to get on Nick Jr. in prime time this fall. Nick Jr. has quietly become a popular network for preschool kids and for their families. And I think this Nick Mom approach could work. 2-hour block, repeated on the same night, 7 nights a week, could be very interesting. And, of course, we haven't talked about the Discovery Networks, which I think are in for some interesting times right now with Destination America taking over Planet Green, Oprah Winfrey Network, OWN, still going. I know there's still the boosters out there, but keep your eye on OWN. They're starting to make a move with their programming like Welcome to Sweetie Pie, All America's Coming Back. They got some interesting shows in the fire. So don't put the sword Damocles above OWN just yet.
Well, in terms of that, Simon, that's very that's an intriguing thing there, because again, there've been a lot of second guessing, a lot of Monday morning quarterbacking, whatever cliche you want to use about how that thing got trotted out there. The one consistent criticism that I keep hearing is that it's a network that doesn't seem to have enough of her direct imprint on, at least in the way that people were used to in terms of a daily show. Like that. I mean, yeah, she's had her face in front of the camera somewhat on there, but maybe people expected more. I don't know. What kind of lessons do they seem to be drawing internally from the lack of success that they've had, at least relative to their expectations?
Well, here's the big lesson, Rick. First of all, make sure that your major talent, the person you are banking on, is fully available and committed to do it. That was probably the biggest error that OWN committed, because at the time, January of last year, Oprah was still doing her talk show.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just have her doing the talk show and then turn around quickly and do OWN stuff. So she was not available to fully, really get the network under her wing. On top of that, a lot of the places that OWN was running were on digital systems like Channel 451 and 872 and so on and so forth. It was replacing a network that was getting minuscule ratings. So that was another problem with people finding the channel. A third was that OWN had to do more original programming off the top than it was going to. They were going to take shows from Discovery Health, shows from other Discovery networks like Investigation Discovery and put them on, and the audience rejected that. And so they had to try to fill in quickly with new shows, some of which may not have been into the Live Your Best Life motto or format that Oprah was looking at all along. It looks like they've gotten that baggage out of the way. They also had to contend with the fact that new television networks that do get their act together don't get their act together the very first year. ESPN didn't, CNN didn't, The Weather Channel didn't, and now it's celebrating 30 years. And a lot of the critics and the media forgot that. It's like, oh, first year, Oprah's in trouble, and let's really pounce on her and keep pouncing and so forth. And yes, the rating did grow. But it looks like they may have a handle. And I think this coming year is a big year for OWN, particularly if they can get Comcast and other cable operators to pay for the right to carry their signal.
In a sense, Lloyd, that almost sounds like what Simon's describing there. It almost sounds like a problem that I think all of us would like to have at some point here, living up to our own reputations here and expectations for success. In a sense, it seems enviable for Oprah, even if it didn't feel like at the depths of the ratings.
Well, I would disagree with my esteemed colleague Simon on this. I think that David Zaslav, the CEO of Discovery, has got to be probably second-guessing and third-guessing himself why he went into business with this woman. I mean, even at the upfront, Simon and I were both there. After an upfront takes place, the talent generally comes out to mingle with the buyers. And in the media, even if it's just to press the flesh and hear the same old war stories, she did not do that. She didn't do it last year. She didn't do it this year. She still thinks she's in Chicago. It's 1998. It's a whole different world. I mean, I wouldn't say Oprah Winfrey's a has-been, but you know what? It's not 1998 either. And I talked to some Discovery executives about this, and they agreed with me. They said privately, you're right. I mean, she should have been out there.
Yeah.
And so I don't think she really gets it. I think she thinks just by snapping her fingers and saying, I'm Oprah Winfrey, anything with my name on it, people, you know, built it and they will come.
I totally agree. I think that was faux pas. And whether it was the reasoning I got from some folks at Discovery was, well, she had this dinner with Joel Breezy, the head of ad sales there. No. When you have that upfront, you got that opportunity, you got to make the most of it. You got to get out there and mingle with the press, with the talent, with the advertiser people, because your network, your hide is on the line.
Yeah, I agree, Simon. I think, I know there was a competing dinner. She could have blown that off for a half hour at the very least. I think that was an excuse. She probably had a helicopter waiting for at the top of the Frederick Rose Building to get her out of there as soon as humanly possible so she didn't have to mingle with the hoi polloi. That's always been her image, and I'm sorry that's not changing. So I don't see OWN changing at all. David Zaslav himself, the CEO, made it his business to meet and greet and talk to people. She couldn't do that herself, like you said. I would say if this were buy-sell, I'd sell OWN real fast. David Zaslav probably wishes he could do it right now.
Last question I got for you guys in our available time here of about 3 minutes. Do you guys feel that it shows any kind of newfound humility on her part? The fact that she is pretty much indicated she's going to be staying at arm's length from the presidential election this year, rather than telling people who to vote for as she did in 2008. So I'll start with you, Simon. Is this a sign that she's thinking that, hey, I got to keep my head down and just focus on my business here?
Absolutely. You have to.
Okay.
This is a critical time for the network. You have to.
Okay. What do you think, Lloyd?
I agree, but I also think that the timing's different. I mean, look, President Obama, when he was running in 2008, was the first African-American to be in that position. There was a certain novelty. I can understand why she had to do that. Well, the novelty's not there anymore. And again, I'm not saying this to back President Obama. It's just the novelty isn't there. And he's put his 4 years in, and there's nothing to really gain by putting your neck on the line at this point.
All right. Well, I appreciate that you guys are always putting your neck on the line for us with your excellent insights and analysis and everything that you guys bring to it here. Truly a pleasure to get to talk about the upfronts with you guys, upholding the annual tradition in the FDH Lounge. And I know that we can find an occasion to make it happen again soon with you two guys. Thank you both so much, as always, Simon Applebaum and Lloyd Carroll.
Rick, a pleasure. Simon, a pleasure as well.
Thank you. Take care, Lloyd. Take care, Rick, everybody.
I really appreciate having you guys on. Thanks very much. And thank you all for tuning in. FDH Lounge, mini episode number 121.